Good morning, church. Man, it's good to be with all of you guys this morning. So excited to be here. I'm just standing, worshiping, and it is like, it really doesn't cease to amaze me that the innocent was judged guilty so that the guilty could be free. Like, just let those words sit for a second. That is an insane thing. And if that is all God has ever done for us, then that is more than we could have ever asked for or imagined. And yet he does more. So if that was it, that's enough. And that makes him good. And that is awesome. We serve a great and a good God. And I'm excited to be here with you this morning to explore what our great and good God has for us. So, as many of you know, if you've been a part of Mosaic for any given period of time, at the beginning of each year, we usually take a weekend, sometimes two or three like this year, to really talk through together what it is God is calling us into as a church for the upcoming year. Now, we know that God has called us as a church, called the global church, to demonstrate our passion for him and his passion for people every day, to essentially love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourself, to carry the gospel into the world. These are things that are assumed no matter the year. But we look to each year and ask the question, what particular unique focus does God have for us? What is he pushing us or propelling us into so that we might fulfill that great calling in the unique way for this particular year? So in the third and fourth quarter of each year, I begin to pay attention because I know the next year is approaching, and I just want to pay attention to what God might be stirring in us for the upcoming year. And so I begin to watch the kind of the movement of the church internally. What's going on with us? Where are we at? What is God up to here? I look to our city and see what God is up to in our city and what's happening and where the areas of struggle might be. I look to the world and try to discern what God is up to in the world just to see if in that process God will begin to bring about some focal point for us as he continues to develop us and move us into his desire and his will, because this is his church, not ours. We are the church and we're here for him. And so I begin to do that. And then as the fourth quarter approaches, I begin to ask directly, like, I've been paying attention, but I need you to actually tell me. Because if I get on that stage come January and you haven't told me what your vision is, I am not saying anything. I'm just going to stand there and stare at people. It gets super awkward. And I'm going to walk off and they're not going to know what happened. And you got to tell me. Because I don't want to bring our vision. I want to know what God has for us. This particular year, 2018... In the third and fourth quarter, as I was paying attention and beginning just to watch, God actually, this year, brought his vision about in me and then in the leadership and the staff as it was confirmed in what was to me a very unusual way, at least in a very unusual space, a space I would never have expected God to use to bring about his great vision for us. So each year in the fall, Brooke and I, my wife, get the privilege of traveling to Colorado, to Estes Park, to a place called the Wind River Ranch. The Wind River Ranch is a place where throughout the summer family camps happen, and then throughout the fall marriage retreats happen, and then in the mid-fall they invite for a week pastors and their wives from all over the country that are exhausted, spent, burned out, because ministry can be exhausting at times. That are done with the realities of what it takes to be in that space, that are hurt and struggling. And they bring them together for a week just to experience just some rest and some spiritual pouring into, because they're pouring out all the time. And Brooke and I were the recipients of that weekend a couple of years ago when we were navigating our new large family, and we were spent, exhausted, done, finished, and that week became life-giving for us. And then in consequent years, I've had the opportunity to teach with my wife, Brooke and I both teaching there and pouring into other pastors and their wives who come in exhausted. And it's neat because we were there, and so we can speak into, yeah, a few years ago we were on your side, now we get to pour in, but yet you pour in and it's beautiful. So every year we do that. And this particular year, There was another little conference that kind of happened literally the week after that one, just a little ways from Estes Park in Colorado Springs, and we were invited to go and attend that conference. Now, what makes this conference particularly unique is that it was put on by Outreach Ministries, best known for the Outreach magazine that they put out nationally. And Outreach every year, along with Lifeway, which is a large research institution in our country that researches different things going on in the church, they do a study every year that looks to the particular principles and things learned that affect the effectiveness of churches engaging in their community and reaching people to know Jesus. And so one of the ways they do that is that they do a research study every year to find the 100 fastest growing churches in the nation, and then they look to see if there are principles that apply across the board so that they can extract those and say to other churches, this is what's currently in our cultural context effective in meeting the needs of people and to engage people in the beauty of the gospel. So their heart is beautiful in that. But I didn't encounter a lot of that. What I encountered a lot of times was that Outreach Magazine every year puts out the 100 fastest growing churches. And so automatically, I knew this is about numbers and craziness. And this year, this church ended up on that list. And so then they call you and they invite you to Colorado with your wife to come with the other 100 churches to this little conference and to talk about this reality. And the second I got the invitation, I said, I'm not going to that. Are you kidding me? No, thank you. I mean, can you imagine going to a place, sitting around with a bunch of churches that are big and fast growing and talking about who's the biggest and who's the fastest growingest? I'm like, oh yeah, they don't know us very well. I couldn't care less about any of that stuff. And so that is the last place on the planet that I want to be, is with a bunch of people that are obsessed with numbers. And then they reached out and they asked at the little conference, they asked if we would mind teaching at the conference. They said, Rena, would you teach at the conference? And then that got a little tricky because then I'm like, well, I don't really care about going and teaching. I'm trying to raise eight teenagers, so I say no to most stuff. But this opportunity to be able to speak into that space where you have all these churches that are fast growing and clearly obsessed with just going fast and numbers and growth and I can speak into that and I can bring the heart that's here. I can share with them the beauty of what drives us and how we're driven by the gospel and that we kind of grew accidentally. In fact, we tried really not to grow and then we grew anyway and then we tried not to grow again and it kept happening and that we're not driven by that. And man, we could bring something to the table. So as I dialogued with Phil and the leadership here, they really felt like also, man, this is a great opportunity to speak into a space that may not understand some of the beautiful motivations by which we function and the gospel and how central it is here. And so we decided to go. So we went to Wind River Ranch, and even the entire week at Wind River Ranch, I was like, Brooke and I were both like, oh, I don't know what this is going to be like. I just don't want to do the small talk thing about church growth. You know, I'm just not interested. And so we roll out there, and we get there, and the first night that we gather, Jim, who is one of the lead editors there, he gathers the pastors and their wives, and they're getting ready to celebrate the fastest 100 growing churches. And he gets up, and he starts talking and sharing. And as he's sharing, he's like, look, we're not here to celebrate our work. We're not here to celebrate how quickly things are growing. We're here to celebrate what God is doing in this nation. And what he's doing among these churches that are setting the pace for others to learn from, to be effective in caring for their community. And it's been my joy to get to know many of you pastors and the great things God is doing. And in a culture where the movement right now is for people to be leaving church. I mean, in our culture right now, every year, people leave the church in droves. It's like, it's pretty exciting to be in a room where people are actually coming to church. So he said, this year, the 2017-18 year, 76,000 people started attending these 100 churches. So between those 100 churches, 76,000 people began a journey to regularly attend church, be discipled, and encounter Jesus. And he said, that's worth celebrating. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, hold on, you're supposed to be obsessed with numbers. You're supposed to be saying things like, you guys are awesome, but you're not saying any of that. And the Spirit of God began to speak to me and say, oh, you arrogant child. I remember distinctly that was his first words. You arrogant child. You made assumptions about this place. You assumed that because they are doing studies on church growth, that their obsession was church growth, that their obsession was numbers. You came in assuming that you were the great voice of reason among all these people. Where we often say here, we are not the best church. We are not the only church in town. We are part of a greater community. In this category of church growth, my pride was that we don't care about church growth. That was where my pride was residing. I was so prideful about that, that I didn't even recognize it as pride because it sounds like humility. We don't care about church growth. So much so that we're actually the best church on that. It's insane. And the Spirit of God started going, so, time to wake up, buddy. Now, I do have you here, but I have you here to learn more than I have you here to teach. And so I sat in that room, and as they started going around the room, pastor and his wife at a time, telling the story of that church and what happened to them, here's what suddenly started coming out. You know how many churches on that list are like us? They're just trying to serve their city, love Jesus, share the gospel, and they just started growing, and they're not quite sure what to do about it. A bunch of them. A bunch of them are standing like, yeah, we're just, I don't know. They just keep coming, and I don't know. We just want to be faithful. And I'm looking at these pastors, I'm like, wow, and another great story, and another great story. And I'm sitting in a room among great stories, and we get to share our great story of what God is doing here and in this city. And it was awesome. And I sat by the end of that night just feeling both so excited and so humbled and so arrogant. And I'm like, man, God, thank you for putting me in my place. And I sat in that room afterwards, and as we were leaving, it became this incredibly exciting week because it turns out our church is one of the top 10 fastest growing churches in the nation this year. And here's the thing about that. What makes that exciting is that we now get to speak into and get spoken into by some of the other churches that are figuring the same stuff out we're trying to figure out and learning some of the same stuff we're learning so that we can disseminate that information to churches that are trying to be effective in their city and are just starting. Outreach Magazine's heart is for church planters, and that's why they do all of this. And I just sat there going, this is incredible. And then I came out of that, and we spent the next 2 or 3 days sitting around as pastors and wives, dialoguing through some of the realities that come with the dynamics of church growth and the dynamics of what we are doing that is affecting church growth. And again, the stuff ending up on the table was awesome. As we talked more and more, I'll tell you what we brought to the table. What we're doing here in this church as far as reaching into the hard spaces of people that are struggling is amazing. When we started talking about our engagement with orphans and children from hard places, most of the tables I sat out there like, man, can we learn from you guys? When we talked about engaging in human trafficking and what we do there, how we engage in our city with local partnerships, where we jump in with special needs. And when I got into special needs, it's amazing what our children's ministry team and other teams are doing here with special needs families and children and the unique realities that come with that. And we got to speak into that. And the more we talked about the missional lives we live and how the gospel infiltrates that, the more exciting others became to learn. But at the same time, something else began to happen. In each and every conversation, as the other pastors were sharing what God was up to in their churches, what I kept hearing over and over again, uniquely, was an incredible passion for people that don't know Jesus. In one after the next after the next. They would talk about in their churches, in their communities, what they're trying to do to help people encounter the message of the gospel and come to know Jesus. And I would listen, and at first I was nodding like, yeah, yeah. Then the conversation would get back down to being a gospel presence, and we'd be on the table. And then it'd become a gospel voice, and we'd be learning and listening. And it dawned on me as we're talking, man, it's been a long time since I've sat in a room with this many people as passionate about seeing people come to know Jesus as this room. So the Spirit of God began to stir things in me. We get in the car after the conference, after having a great time and learning so much from outreach and the team and the pastors there. And we're driving back to the airport, and Brooke says to me, So, what did you learn from the conference? And I start unpacking kind of the stuff I just told you. Wow, I came in with this idea, but I'm so surprised. They're awesome, and these churches are great, and I'm looking forward to ongoing relationship with them and learning, and what a space we have here to be able to shape the ongoing realities of the national church. And oh, it's going to be so many fun things, and wow, I'm inspired by some of the people and their hearts. And when I'm done, I look at Brooke, and I'm like, so what did you get out of it? And she shares a little thing or two, processes it, and she goes, you know, probably one of the biggest things is I was just really convicted that we kept sitting at these tables with these people that really care deeply about sharing the gospel with the people in their city, telling people about Jesus. And we really at Mosaic don't bring that to the table much. I mean, we know it's important, but we don't really talk about it much. We don't really equip our church well in that. And I'm sitting in the seat driving, and I'm starting to feel defensive. And I'm like, no, we're just, it's more subtle, and we do it as a great gospel presence, and we're earning the right to be heard. And I'm about to loose onto my wife all the wonderful defenses as to why we are actually awesome, because if we're not, then it's my leadership and my personal value system crashes and burns in the car. And not really, but you know, you have those moments of feeling that. And I'm about to speak, and the Spirit of God goes, do you really want me to have a humbling conversation with you twice in the same week? I mean, really? Have you not figured this out so far yet? And I'm in the car before I speak, and I'm like, man, I'd rather not have the Spirit tell me again in a single week, you arrogant child. And so as my wife began to unpack, and I'm listening to her, and she's shaping vision, I'm like, man, she's so right. And so then the question began to haunt me, was why? Why is that true? Why is it that we are this church that cares deeply about the freedom of people and cares deeply about people knowing Jesus and encountering Jesus and cares deeply and celebrates in tremendous ways when people come to know the gospel? We preach the gospel. We love what Jesus has done for us. We want people to know. Why is it then that this is not a giant part of what we continually encourage, inspire, and equip all of us to do? And as I began to think, it didn't take long at all for me to have the answer, because I already know the answer. It's a very personal thing. You see, we have lived in a space over the last 3, 4, 5 decades where the lines between going out for the sake of Christ to preach the gospel of Jesus so that people would know him and having an agenda to convert people to Christianity so they can join the church and grow it fast are blurred. And when you begin to talk about evangelism, about tooling up, about knowing how to communicate the gospel in a way that is able to be encountered by your friends, all these things, and we begin to do trainings on that, very quickly, you start shifting into a space where before you know it, you start checking boxes on how many people came to Jesus and how many baptisms, and you start celebrating conversions for conversion's sake. And then we just become a bunch of salespeople peddling the gospel for our own desires and our own futures. And I fear that. Do you hear it in my voice? I fear that. I have always feared that people might think that our motive is anything but the gospel. And so in that fear, I have responded in a manner that is not biblical and not godly. I have said, since we fear that, let's just leave that alone, the whole evangelism thing, and we'll make the gospel super beautiful, and then people will naturally tell their friends about it, and we don't have to worry about agendas or what people might think we're doing. And it has certainly had impact, because people come to Jesus here, and many of you have encountered friends or been a part of this, and it's been your spiritual journey. But I knew it. I knew it immediately. I know why I'm not doing it, because I'm afraid, and we should never do anything out of fear. And so, man, the Spirit of God started convicting. And then there was a second thing, a little more practical, that when we go out to share our faith, and I mentioned this last week when we talked about evangelism, We just have to be honest that that is a complicated and difficult space in our cultural context. How do you start a conversation about Jesus with somebody else when they don't know Jesus or believe in Jesus? How do you do it in a culture where the realities of the political and the institutional context are so insane and blurred and crazy that the second you say Christian or Jesus, it ties to 55 other things it has no business tying to? How do you even begin? How do you start a conversation and then not have it be awkward? How do you recover from a conversation when you start it and it is just as awkward as you thought it would be and it goes just as badly as you imagined it could and now you're working with a coworker that thinks you're super weird? I mean, these are real questions and they're really hard and they're complicated and they're personal and they're relational. And so to drive into this space is asking a lot of any of us. You see, where our passions lie is engaging in spaces where we are engaging with those who are orphaned, children from hard places, or those who have been the victims of human trafficking, those enslaved. We want to engage there. We want to engage in spaces with those impoverished because we know what poverty does to a person and to their family and to a community. We want to engage in those oppressed because injustice is unacceptable. And so, yes, we want to do that, and so we do. I'll tell you again, our church is a front runner in our insanity of engaging in hard places regardless of the cost, and I love that. And we do that, I think, so prolifically because at the end of the day, you can't really question agenda on that, can you? I mean, you can, I suppose, but then you just look at the cost. Financially, emotionally, spiritually, trauma is insane. Our families, you guys stepping into mission, our city, and you just look at that and you're like, no, oh yeah, if this is your big plan for an agenda, it's a stupid plan because it's costing you way more than you're getting out of it. And then I love that because it allows us to have the sense of you can't question our agenda here. We're doing this because we love Jesus and we want him to redeem, and we are redeemers, and we've said it a million times here. On behalf of Christ, we go redeem the world. And it's not that we're hiding the fact that we're here for the gospel. We just, that's our focus, being a gospel presence, and it's awesome. And honestly, though it is much harder to be a gospel presence in terms of the daily cost on us, our souls, our pockets, our everything else, it is a little easier relationally. Because who doesn't look at us after we help and go, fist bump? Even the people you're helping, I mean, after some of the trauma's undone, because you know how that rolls sometimes, they will engage like, thank you. And so there's a certain walking away going, this is safe. I mean, it's unsafe, but it's safe. And so between the realities of not being equipped and not wanting to be a place that becomes an agenda for conversion, we've left this thing alone for a long time. Mentioning it here and there, making it an issue, but never a giant focus. And the Spirit of God began to say, no more time to live out of fear. Because here's the problem. See, here's the problem. As you begin to jump into Scripture, it is undeniable that God's heart for us is freedom. From Genesis to Revelation, you read it in every verse and page. God's heart for humanity is freedom. He created us in freedom. Then when we blew it, he began to make promises about our freedom. He began to affect structures for our freedom. He began to be with us in the Old Testament to demonstrate our freedom. And then he sent his son to affect our freedom for us and to set us free for good, for eternity. And then he calls us into a restored purpose for our freedom. And then he writes, I mean, like in Galatians 5:1, it is for freedom that I have set you free, period. His heart is for our freedom. And we know that. But here's the trouble. That as you look at that and you look at God's heart for freedom, it is also inescapable that God's heart for our freedom always includes meeting the needs of the community temporarily, because that demonstrates the gospel, and sharing the message of the gospel with them, because that reveals eternity to them. And temporal solutions are not eternal. And so there is not a time in Scripture that Jesus himself, the God of the universe in flesh and blood, is not unpacking for his disciples. You go meet their needs, you go tell them about me. They were hand in hand. They were inseparable because to have a heart for someone's freedom is to share the gospel with them. That can never be separated. Do you remember in Luke chapter 9 and 10? We've been there for a little while over the last couple of weeks because it's a space where Jesus is unpacking the realities of what it means to follow him on this planet and to live on mission for him. And so as we looked at Luke chapter 9 and 10, it's chapter 9 in verse 1, it starts with the gathering of the 12 disciples, empowering them by the Spirit to heal the sick and cast out demons, and then sending them out to preach the gospel in the villages while casting out demons and healing the sick. And then the rest of chapter 9 and 10 is Jesus unpacking what it means to follow him. You're going to have to take up your cross daily and follow me. Be redemptive on my behalf like I'm going to be redemptive for you. You might lose your life, but if you lose it for my sake, you'll find it. These are the things said in Luke 9 and 10, those chapters. And then Mary and Martha, the landing at the end of 10 going, but be with me, otherwise you can't go out. In Luke chapter 10, verse 1, Jesus gathers the 72, so 72 of his followers, and he gets ready to send them out. And this is what transpires in that event. Listen to this. This is in Luke chapter 10 in verse 1. In Luke 10, 1, it says, after this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them on ahead of him, two by two, into every town and place where he himself was about to go. Now, this is what strikes me. Watch this. And he said to them, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. And then he said, go on your way. Behold, I am sending you out as lambs in the midst of wolves, which we talked about last week. He's sending us into the hard and complex environment in which meeting the needs of people is hard and costly and complex, and sharing the gospel message is hard and difficult and complex. He says it's going to feel like you're a sheep among wolves, but that's where I'm sending you. Why? Because the harvest for redemption is plentiful, but the workers are limited. So we've all got to go. And while you go, you ask the God of the harvest, that's a sovereignty verse, the one who will do the work, you ask him to send more of us out so that we can participate together as we do the great work of the gospel. See, the heart of Jesus was for the freedom of humanity. And his calling, his great work for that freedom was both in the spaces of the temporal and the spaces of the eternal. And so when he sends us out, we should expect nothing less. I send you out with the power to meet the needs of your community and with the clarity to reveal to them the beauty of the gospel. So you better do both, because they together affect the freedom of a person. And you know what the truth is? It's no wonder that Jesus, that God himself throughout the scripture, in his heart for freedom, in his heart for humanity, always makes the sharing of the gospel so that a person can encounter the redemptive work of Jesus and Jesus himself and be transformed as part of what it means to set someone free. Do you know why? Because when you study the scriptures, Old and New Testament, but particularly New Testament, the descriptors of who we are prior to coming to know Jesus and being transformed by the gospel are an extraordinary list to read. They're scattered all over scripture. Do you know what's included in that list? Let me give you a few. Do you know that we're described as orphans prior to coming to know Jesus? That the language used in our encounter with Jesus who sets us free is that we are adopted as sons and daughters into the family of God through the great redemptive work of Jesus, that we were once orphaned, we were once not a people, but now we are a people. The entire language structure is about being an orphan that needs a home. A person without Jesus is spiritually orphaned. The Bible clearly describes our spiritual poverty before we know Jesus. We are impoverished spiritually. In fact, the Bible would say that before we know Jesus, we have nothing spiritually because we are spiritually dead. It actually uses the language of spiritually dead. Your spirit is the ultimate version of impoverished. It has nothing. And when we come to know Jesus, that's part of the language that we go from being impoverished spiritually to being the recipients of what? The full inheritance of God, that he will lavish his kindness on us for all of eternity. That's what makes it so profound. I was once poor spiritually, but now I am rich. And then we are described as oppressed. Oppressed by death, oppressed by sin, oppressed by the realities of this world, oppressed by our own need to pursue the things of the flesh. And my favorite of all, the one that's perhaps most dramatic, is that we are slaves. I mean, what a word. Slaves. Slaves to sin, slaves to death. We have no out. We are bound in a way that in of ourselves we cannot be set free. See, here's the crazy part. We here would say we have a great heart for the orphaned, a great heart for the impoverished, a great heart for the oppressed, a great heart for the enslaved. But the trouble is that I so often forget that when I'm walking around my neighborhood with people driving their cars and living in their houses and building up their retirements, that their impoverished, enslaved, orphaned, oppressed reality is simply hidden behind the exceptional and crazy prosperity of this nation. And so we have to wake up. You remember how we started into the whole giant world of orphan care, then special needs, then human trafficking? I traveled to Ethiopia several times, and in the journey of discovering my children living there and engaging in their story and finding out their story and other stories, here's what I learned: that many parents have had to abandon their children in environments like Ethiopia because they didn't have the means to feed them. They weren't bad parents. They weren't in places that they didn't care about their children. They wanted to, but they couldn't. And so their best bet was to let them go because they couldn't care for them. And I came back to this church and I said, as long as that's true, I'm not going to wake up in the morning and go to bed spending my time building a retirement. I'm going to spend my time trying to do something to change that so that no mom or dad ever has to do that. You see, when you encounter it face to face, it awakens you and you can never go back. And we need that same awakening to our coworkers and friends and neighbors who do not know Jesus. Because spiritually, that is their reality. And let me tell you something. If you want to talk about harvest, like, is the harvest plentiful? Is the harvest right? Do you know that we live in one of the places where we can arguably say it is of the ripest? You know why? So Barna Group, which is an organization that does these statistical studies. Sometimes they'll do a one-year study. Sometimes they'll do a 5 or 10-year study. And they'll work and work and work and then present statistics that say this demonstrates a reality. So the Barna Group, when they do their statistical studies, they also are very good in them to say things about the probability of that particular study. So they'll say the probability for error in the study is 0.01% or 0.04% or 5% or whatever. So they did a study for the last 7 years that was published in 2018 as it came to a close. They studied, an inordinate amount of people throughout the whole country, and they looked at cities. And this was the question they asked: which cities in our country are the most churched? In other words, people regularly attend church. And this is how they defined regularly: more than twice a year, right? So, if you're not regular, you're not talking about 3 times a month. I mean, you come on Christmas and Easter, that didn't count. But everything else pretty much counted. And so they looked at all the cities in America over 7 years on a massive study, 0.04% of margin of error, which is essentially zero. Orlando, woo! Greater Orlando area, okay? Are we on the top 20 cities of most churched? In other words, people attend church regularly here in Orlando. No, we're not. We are not on the, there are lots of cool cities on that where people attend church regularly. We're not one of them. Are we on the list of most unchurched in a city? Top 20. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Are we on that list in the top 10? Yes. Our
our city that we live in, the greater Orlando area, from here to Daytona Beach, falls nationwide in the top 10 cities of people that don't attend church. Because they come from everywhere else to here to run away from whatever they're running away from, mostly the cold. And then they come here and they break from whatever burden they felt and they no longer attend church. Or, which is more statistically accurate, there is a slow abandoning of anything organized and eventually faith itself. Oh, here's my favorite statistic, at least for the point I'm making. It's my least favorite. There was the same study, another question asked, what about de-churched? That's people that used to attend church regularly, but now they don't attend church regularly anymore, either because they've abandoned faith or because they've abandoned the idea of a biblical community because it's so horrid. Are we on the top 20 list of cities with the most people that are de-churched? Yes. Top 10? Yes. Oh, it gets better. Ninth? No. Eighth? Uh-uh. Seventh? No. Number 6 in the nation. There are more people in our city that have abandoned being a part of a biblical community for one reason or another than any other city in the country except for 5 of them. San Francisco's on that list. Portland's on that list. Something I think Seattle is. I mean, when we talk about like church planting and we're like find a city where the unchurched and the de-churched live, you usually think like northeast and west. Hello? Orlando? Come on, baby, bring it. And where did God put us? Right here in Orlando. Is it any wonder that God is beginning to stir us up toward becoming a gospel voice? Because I'll tell you what, we've spent over a decade earning a gospel presence, earning the right for our city to believe that our agenda is in the right place. You know why? Because our agenda is in the right place. We do this because we care about Jesus, not ourselves. But we have earned that right. And so we don't stop doing that. We just make sure that a part of our journey is now moving from just a gospel presence to a gospel voice. We need to begin together to learn to become confident and passionate about sharing the message of the gospel with our neighbors, our coworkers, our friends, our city, so that they would come to know Jesus if God so sees fit. Now, if we're going to do that, sounds awesome, we still got to come back to where we started with fear, because the fear I have for the two things that cause this is real fear. And though we should not respond out of fear, we should be aware of why we're afraid, and then we should do something about that fear. And there were two things I was afraid of, that this would become an agenda, checking boxes to see how many conversions we have, to grow our church fast so we can stay on the great top 10 lists and be awesome, and then it all just goes out of the window. How do we avoid that? And that was the question we began to wrestle with over the last few months. How do we engage in equipping you to go share your faith, equipping me to go share my faith, to become a church that puts a high value on that, but doesn't make it about an agenda, about us, about conversion, about selling something to someone? And as we wrestled through that, we began to back up through the system. Like, what would avoid that? And as we did that, that's when the real vision of 2019 came to its fruition. It's not just evangelism. I remember probably for me where it became most clear is in a conversation I had with Kevin Richardson, who came on staff this year. He runs our communications department, which is anything that you see that's graphics, videos, online, all of the stuff that is around us that we notice but don't notice. That's all the beautiful hand of Kevin and his team. So Kevin's sitting with me and he's trying to understand the vision for 2019 because he wants to put it into a picture. And so he's asking questions and I'm telling him things and I'm wrestling backwards. Yeah, but we don't want this, but I'm very afraid of that. And I don't want it to become this, but I do want it that. And we have to do this, but I'm not sure how to do this. And suddenly I remember when he went, I think I've got it. I think I've got it. And he just went home and he just worked. And he came back to me and he showed me this. And he said, I think I've captured what you're trying to say in a picture. And I was so envious. Because it takes me 45 minutes, almost 50 now, not quite, but I'm getting sorry. Takes me 45 minutes to unpack this, and Kevin can do it in like 4 seconds. Ding, picture. See, on this picture, it captures not only our vision, but how we are going to step into a church that shares our faith without becoming a place that is driven by agenda and becomes self-focused on growth. And it has to begin here. We have to be with Jesus more regularly than ever, more profoundly than ever. Because if we're not with Jesus, if we're not captivated by him and his great redemptive work, if we're not preaching the gospel to ourselves, if we are not encountering his transformation in our lives ourselves, and we go on mission in the gospel presence space, we die on mission there. We burn out, we get exhausted, but at the end of the day, we still help people, right? But if we are not with Jesus in regularity, captivated by him, intimate with him, transformed by him, and we go start preaching the gospel, it will become an agenda for us before we blink our eyes. We'll start becoming bean counters before we blink our eyes. And so the importance of being with Jesus has elevated. Now, I don't know that you can elevate it because Jesus said this is the only essential thing. So he already elevated it to the highest elevation, but we, we need to learn. And so we need to elevate that. And so we started there. Prayer. We got to learn to practice the disciplines of the faith, both corporately and individually. We've got to learn to pray, become a praying people. And not only that, but if we're going to go and share our faith, reminding ourselves that we are not the harvesters, we are the sowers who harvests. God does. We knew that he said, pray for workers to who? The God of the harvest. And so when we begin to pray, God, would you transform the people that we're sharing our faith with? God, would you send workers in? God, would you go with us? We remind ourselves that our privilege is to share our faith, not to convert anyone to anything. God's work is to do the transforming. Our work is to do the passionate sharing because we're passionate and personally transformed. So if we do evangelism out of anything but being with Jesus, it's going to get skewed fast. And if it does, then I'll be the first to put a stop to it. We got to be with Jesus. But then, in being with Jesus, we've got to build up a confidence and a clarity and a competence to be able to engage with our friends, our coworkers, our community in a way that can bring the gospel to them graciously and effectively in its truth, even though we're encountering people that have no plausibility for what we're bringing. You see the icon in the middle? It's us with the black circle around us as we are with Jesus. And now we're encountering another human, and they're just like us, but their mind, the circle around them, is different. Why? Because they don't yet know Jesus. So we shouldn't go in naively thinking we're going to roll in and they're going to go, oh, and it's going to be awesome. We got to know that we're encountering people that think wholeheartedly differently than we do. And when we first encounter them, the plausibility of what we're bringing to the table may sound very shaky. See, this is one of the big things that has shifted in our community, in our culture. When you shared the gospel with somebody 30 or 40 years ago, you were almost guaranteed that that person had grown up in some version in church, that the basic Bible stories were part of their life, that they made certain assumptions, whether or not they fully thought they believed it or not, there were certain assumptions. Jesus, they knew who that was. Born of a virgin, they got that one. Resurrected from the dead, pretty sure that happened too. Not sure I'm interested in believing in him, but yes, when you said things like that, Jesus transforms us. He lives in heaven. None of those things set off red flags for plausibility. Those are all plausible, real truths. And then what you had to do was just to really bring the intricacies of the gospel into play so that they could make the connection between that truth and their life and they would know Jesus. When we go out there today, most of whom we're encountering are either people that did not grow up around the Bible stories or church or anything else. They have no idea what you're talking about when you start, or they grew up in some scenario that was legalistic or binding or terrible or judgmental. They never knew the gospel, and they not only don't see it as plausible, they see it as damaging. And you're going in to share with them. And you're going to come rolling in. Hey, I want to share with you about Jesus, and he's invisible, and I met him, and he's transformed my life, and he lives in heaven, and he rose from the dead. you may as well go to them and say, I watched this movie last week, and there's this guy, Thor, and he's awesome, and I met him, and he took me to his planet, and it was awesome, and I want you to go with me next week. Everything in the brain is going, who is this person? Not plausible, not plausible. Now here's the trick. You quickly start thinking to yourself, oh, so we got to come up with a plausible explanation to make a non-plausible thing sound plausible so they'll believe. No. Truth and its absolute nature is irrelevant in whether someone believes something's plausible or not. Let me give you an example. If right now I could travel to the Amazon jungle, track into the Amazon jungle, and find a tribe in that Amazon jungle that has been isolated from community. There's many of them, P.S. And I got to get to them, and I knew their language, and I could speak to them, and I sat down with them, and I said, listen, guys, this and that was sharing, and I say, in my world, where I come from, I got here to the Amazon by getting in a little metal box and then flying across the water and then landed, and I came to you. What are they going to think? Dude, this guy's out of his mind. I mean, he's psycho, right? In a little metal box, flying through the sky, landing. Yeah, whatever. Because their entire paradigm has no space for the plausibility of getting on an airplane and flying. They've seen things in the sky go across, but they have no connection to what they've seen. So they you can't go, you know that, the noise and the little thing? I was on it. Even more crazy now. But what happens if you bring another 30 or 40 people with you over the next few months, and they meet these people and they get to know them and they're super cool people, and every one of them came here on a metal box, what begins to happen to a community? Huh. When there was one of you on the metal box and 30 of us who knew a metal box was a stupid idea, we definitely thought you were crazy. But now there's 100 of you that all came on the metal box, and there's 30 of us that have never been on a metal box. What's the question that begins to stir in somebody's mind in that tribe? Can I come with you on the metal box? And what do we say? Sure. Now, once that person's flown with us on the metal box and flown back, what happens when we go back to the tribe now with that person and they go, oh my gosh, I'm telling you, I was on the metal box. And these other 100 people have all been on the metal box. I think the problem might be that the 30 of us are just isolated from what is true. Is it true that we fly on metal boxes through the sky? See, plausibility has nothing to do with truth. Plausibility has to do with experience and with encounter. And people in our world, in our culture, we no longer have the luxury that their experience and their context of community already established some plausibility about the gospel. We were just filling in details. We're starting with a person who thinks and believes the gospel is not plausible because there's one of you and 10 of them at work. And they're all going, let me guess, Jesus, yeah. But what begins to happen when they encounter 10 more of people that love and know Jesus, and then 100 more, and then 1,000 more, and then 4,000 more, and they come and experience it themselves, and they don't yet know, they've not been on a plane, but they're starting to go, wow, maybe there's something. You see, the reason we have to accept the fact that we're coming in different is because we're in a culture where the plausibility of the gospel has diminished because of the nature of the culture. And we have to come in and demonstrate that plausibility not only in what we say, but in how we live. So it is more important than ever that we are also a gospel presence, not just a gospel voice. So if what happens here is our big vision is to abandon being a gospel presence for a little while so we can become a gospel voice, then we are actually doing more damage than we are doing good. And so this is an add-on, not a new. It's just saying, let's make this serious. And then finally, my favorite part of what Kevin did, because Kevin caught my heart, is he gets to the end and he says, now the last icon that I put on here is a hand. It's our hand. And in that hand is the fruit of the labor, the garden that will be born out of the great work of the gospel. And who are we handing that over to? God. Because who is the responsible one for the harvest? God. Who grows a church if it's grown rightly? God. And so this reminds us Our call is to pray and be with Jesus and pray with Jesus for the great harvest. Our job is to go and share the gospel with Jesus, for Jesus, by the Spirit. God's job is to do whatever he wants with that. And so when we start measuring our success by the growth, we are in deep trouble. Because you can fake that. And you can feel like you're failing when that doesn't show up, even though you're doing this. But our job is to do this, whether it produces growth or not. And so as long as we keep our heads on straight, God grows it, and we pray, and we share. And that's where we want to live. So throughout this year, you'll see these icons on things. If we're teaching you guys, equipping you guys on some stuff, on prayer or the disciplines of the faith, or there's a space where you can engage in prayer or the disciplines of the faith, you're going to see that icon. Come be with Jesus. Where we are equipping you to share your faith with people, you'll see that icon. If there's conferences or things that we're telling you about, tools, you'll see that icon. And if we're talking about celebrating what God is doing and making sure we remember that he's the one doing it, you're going to see that icon. The growth is not ours, it's God's. That's right. And that's how we celebrate, and that's how we're going to live. So, first and foremost, we're going to roll in to make sure that our vision is to participate with God in becoming a gospel voice and sharing the gospel with a city that is the most unchurched, de-churched city in the nation, other than a few ahead of us. And then we're going to trust God to do what he does with the growth. So the first problem, I think, we've at least thought it a bit. This is not an agenda. This is just participating with Jesus. The second problem was the equipping to actually do it. Because remember I said the second thing is, I don't know how. And if I do it and it goes badly, I don't know how to recover. And so we know as a church, organized, the leadership of this church, our calling to affect this vision for us to be a church that prays and shares and sees God work is going to be to equip you to be able to engage effectively in intimacy with Jesus through prayer and the disciplines of the faith and praying for the great move of the gospel and to effectively engage in sharing your faith and recovering from bad conversations. Because our relationship with people should not be diminished just because we have an awkward conversation. We should know how to do that well and still be friends even if somebody has no interest in what we share with them, right? That should be normal, but it's not for us as a community, as a culture, because we don't know how to recover from awkwardness. And we're going to learn that. Why am I picking up the Bible? That's not what I wanted to pick up right now. I read that. How are we going to do that as a church? Organized, teaching the church people, us, to go do what we're going to do. Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, in prayer. We want to help you know ahead of time where you can engage in praying communally already and where you're going to be able to do that so that you can learn together and pray together in community. So you may not know this, but here's a couple of things that have already been ongoing that we are inviting you to be able to say, I might want to be a part of that so I can begin to learn what it means to pray with others in the church for incredible things. Here they are. We have a gathering prayer team. I don't know if you know this, but every gathering that we have in this building, there is a team of people praying for this gathering right now. They usually sit out in that hallway in a couple of chairs and they pray the entire time that we are meeting in here. While you're worshiping and learning and listening and preaching and doing all of that, they're praying for us. Praying that God would move, that God would transform, that God would show, that God would be clear, that God would reveal, that God would do things. And they're there every week and you are welcome to be part of that. So you can immediately, right away, say, I can start praying week in and week out with others in this church for God's moving in our church and our city. Yes, you can. Post-gathering prayer. You hear it at the end of each gathering. We always say there's elders and deacons out here who are willing to pray with you. We always say, you know, if you have something going on in your life or something you want to celebrate, come and pray with them. But it's also an incredible opportunity for you just to come and pray with some of the leaders in our church and for the city and for the world and for laborers. So you're welcome to go up there sometimes and just say, hey, I don't have anything specific to celebrate or that's heavy, but can I pray with you for our church and for our city and for our world? What an incredible opportunity to engage in praying with the leaders of this church. Every weekend they're right here, ready to do that. Ministry teams. If you're part of a ministry team here, That's all the teams that serve in all the different spaces. Those ministry teams pray together regularly. They pray together constantly. If you walk into the back hallways behind here, before we have a gathering, most everything you see happening back there is just teams of people getting together to pray, to set our hearts right, to be captivated by the gospel ourselves before we get on the stage. Because if we're not captivated by Jesus, then we'll become captivated by you. And if we do that, it's over. And so, man, we're back there praying all the time. The ministry teams, the blue shirt teams, the coffee teams, the tech teams, all of them, we pray together. So if you want to pray with people, one of your options is join a ministry team and you'll start praying with people. Our missional communities pray together all the time. So if you're not in a missional community, that's one of the spaces and opportunities that you can jump into, and you will end up learning and praying in regularity with others. And then starting in March, on March 28th, in fact, we are going to start our first prayer and worship night here that will come in regularity after that. We are going to gather together here, whoever wants to, and we are going to spend time just praying and worshiping together. We are not going to have it be a gathering like this where there's all sorts of other components. We come, we pray, we worship, we pray, we worship, we pray, we worship. And we're going to see what God does faithfully when we participate with him in asking him to move in mighty ways. And I can't wait to see what happens at that night. So that'll start in March, and then it will be in some regularity after that. And we're very excited about that. Now, that's facilitating space for you to pray. But listen to this. We also want to equip you to pray. And we're going to do it this way. In our gatherings, we're going to do that. In regularity throughout the year, we already have started with teams of people on our staff looking at how we're going to incorporate into our gatherings in regularity means by which we pray together and how we train you or teach you in prayer. We're going to begin to, in different components of the gathering, bring the disciplines of the faith and prayer to the table in regularity so that you can learn and grow, so that we can do it together. Our missional communities are going to focus this year on learning to be equipped to be people of prayer, to pray rightly in the right vein and mindset, not with the right little words, but with the right heart to pray and to be intimate with God and to ask him to move. And our ministry teams, we're going to focus on having an educational component of teaching you to pray if you're on a ministry team. So if you join a ministry team or a missional community, you're going to learn to pray this year, just by joining one of those. And then we're going to give you resources. We are weeding through the sea of resources out there on prayer and the disciplines of the faith to narrow down the ones that are gospel-centric, that are biblically sound, theologically robust, but accessible and easy for any person who doesn't have to think at some crazy intellectual level. We're going to release those to you throughout the year as we find them. There'll be blogs, there'll be YouTube videos, there'll be books, there'll be articles. We will find people that we trust and have them teach on it. We are going to give you resources so that you can learn to pray. Now, here's the deal. If you have no interest in learning to pray, and I don't mean this sarcastically, the good news is this is a freedom. We're facilitating something for you. We're not going to make you do this. You don't have to join a missional community. Don't get on a ministry team. Don't read any of the resources we give you. Don't look at any of the YouTube videos. Come here, worship, listen, go. You can still do that. But what we want to do is facilitate the opportunity for you to learn if you want to. And there's many ways to do that. What about evangelism? How are we going to do that? Evangelism, we're going to equip you through several means. One, through equipping classes. We're going to equip you through equipping classes. We have these classes where you can go to, and several of our equipping classes this spring is directly related to how we wrestle through sharing our faith, opening conversation, recovering from awkward conversations, all the things we talked about. They're going to help you navigate some of that. You're welcome to jump into that and learn. In our gatherings, we are going to use this space to bring teaching and tools to the table. Do you know what book we're starting next weekend? Anybody know? Someone whispered it. I heard it. First Peter. First Peter! I mean, really? This is going to be awesome. It's epic. It's unbelievable. We've been studying it for the last few months. We're blown away. We can't wait to jump into it. Do you know what First Peter is ultimately about? Peter's writing a letter to this early church to say, what does it look like to be people that belong to one kingdom but are living in another? How do we live on this planet being in the world but not of the world but being friends to the world? In other words, how do we become an asset to our world for the sake of the gospel? You couldn't pick a better book to unpack when you're dealing with how we're going to become people with a heart for evangelism than 1 Peter. And we didn't pick it. It's the next book in the chronological order of traveling through the Bible. 13 years ago, when God said to us, start in Genesis 1, I'll tell you what to do as we go, he knew that in January of 2019, we would be on 1 Peter starting that book, and that his vision for us would be this. Do you know why he knew? Because he is the future. He lives in the future. He doesn't know the future. He is presently with us, and he's presently in the future, and he's presently in the past because he's omnipresent. And so that means he's been here with us for all of the years that we've been traveling through the Bible to get to this day. And he's sitting here going, are you guys excited? I'm excited. He's been waiting a while for us to get here. We're going to give you resources. We're going to do the same thing as we do with prayer. Articles and YouTube videos and books and things that you can learn from, where you can learn to become more effective in understanding the clarity of the gospel, communicating it, and having not awkward conversations with people about Jesus so that they can encounter the gospel. We're going to share tools with you. One of the tools we're going to give you today as you leave here, actually, is an app called the Story app that you're going to be able to download for free. If you were here last week, you remember the video we played at the beginning that was so incredible, the unpacking of the gospel? That video is free online on the Story app. And not only is it free on the Story app, wait for it, you can click on the Story app and select any one of hundreds of languages, and when you push the button, it'll tell that exactly same video but in whatever language you selected. So you could literally encounter somebody that you cannot talk to, and if you can just discern what language they have, you can show them that video in their language and say, that is the gospel. In that app also, after the video, there's an entire little place you scroll through that unpacks the story of the gospel from creation to fall to rescue, restoration, redemption. It gives you the Bible verses that go with it, so you can take the app and study it and learn it over the next couple of weeks so you become so familiar with the story of the gospel. Or you can sit with someone with the app and go, and then next was the fall, and this happened, and this is why the, and I mean, it's that easy. And it's free. So we're going to tool you up with tools like that, starting with the Story app as you leave here. And then in our missional communities, we are going to take time to make sure that we are teaching you guys in missional communities, that I'm learning in missional communities how to effectively engage in sharing our story and our faith with the people in our circle of influence. It's going to be an exciting year. And then we get to the last piece. As we learn to pray and we learn to share our faith, we should not be naive enough to think that it will not grow here. Growth is going to take place on multiple levels. That's why we have the growth like that. We are going to grow because we're going to have to learn how to engage with the gospel in a brand new way, knowing it like we've never known it before, being captivated by it like we've never been captivated. So there's going to be growth in us. And whose business is that? God's. But do we get to participate in that? Yes, so we're going to push ourselves to grow. We are also going to see others grow who don't know Jesus. How are they going to grow? Because we're going to tell them about who? Jesus, and when they encounter him, if they believe, what's going to happen to them? They're going to jump into a journey with Jesus of discipleship, and they're going to grow. And by the end of 2019 or 20, they're going to say, this has been the most growing year of my life, like many of us did in those early years, or if this is your first year encountering Jesus. And then the likelihood that we're going to grow numerically is there. We might not, but we should not naively say, oh, we won't. So with growth, because growth is not what we work for, but it is what we facilitate, we have to be clear about that. Because if, listen to this carefully now, if we all go out and we become incredibly passionate at sharing our faith, and people come to know Jesus, and we bring them to this community before they know Jesus so that they can encounter a biblical community where they can see the plausibility of the incredible reality of the gospel, because so many of us not only believe it, but live it. If we begin to see that, and they come here, and when they come, they can't park because we're out of parking and there's no people out there helping because everyone's too busy, and they come check their kid in, and oh, sorry, we're full. You can't have your kid and take your toddler into the gathering with you, and the donuts aren't out properly, and the coffee's cold, and what's that going to do? It's going to take plausibility and diminish it down to next to nothing. They're just going to go, told you, church sucks. And yes, I said that. But here's the deal. At the end of the day, if they come here and they experience this place, as we all know is possible, that all that is seamless because we are engaged and we're facilitating growth, then the gospel is made beautiful to them, and the plausibility of the gospel that is true becomes a part of their system to begin to explore and see what God has to do. So we take growth seriously because we have to facilitate it. And here's what we're going to do.
If this year we begin to grow at a fast pace again because people are coming to know Jesus or coming here to encounter Jesus, then first and foremost, we're going to take the space we have available and we're going to fill it. Now, you're the 1117, so you're sort of going, I get it. But in the 9, there's a few more chairs. Not a ton, but a few. And we have the Thursday night, and so we'll just begin to develop into the spaces we have, and this place will fill up, and the 9 will fill up, and we'll just kind of track along that journey. Children's ministry, which is a big deal because our church, every family comes with 19 children, and so you know what it's like in there, right? But here's what we've done. We've already converted some of the rooms in the children's ministry that weren't children's rooms into children's rooms. They do this in every building we've ever got into. They steal them all. So that's already happened. So we are gearing up to be able to facilitate space for the children that will need to be checked in to experience Jesus there so their parents can experience Jesus here so that both of them don't experience each other in this hour in a non-Jesus manner, right? And so that's a really good thing. But an empty room with a bunch of 3-year-olds in it and no adult is what? Really bad, right? So we need adults in there serving to be able to pour Jesus into these children. So we can make all the rooms in the world available, but if we don't have the people to fill those rooms and care for our kids, then it's not going to work. So if we're going to be a church that's going to take evangelism seriously, then we're also going to have to become a church that takes serving internally seriously in a new way, a way we've never done it before. We're going to have to be more serious about that than ever, because otherwise, when we share our faith with people, they're going to come here, not experience the gospel in some crazy way, and that's going to be a detriment, and we don't want that for them. So we are going to have to up the ante in engaging in serving internally here. Serve one gathering, attend one gathering. That should be a norm for every one of us that calls this place home. So you're going to engage. I'm going to engage in serving where we can. We're going to jump into children's ministry. 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 Did I get stuck? We're going to jump into children's. I'm trying to get past it. Hold on. We're going to jump into. Okay, there we go. I got stuck there. We're going to jump into that so that we can facilitate what we're doing with space, with the manpower to love our kids well for the sake of Christ and share the gospel with them. FYI, Barna, who did all these awesome studies, they also found that children between the ages of 3 and 10, because plausibility isn't an issue, are most likely to accept and understand the gospel and its beautiful truth than anything after that. We should be in there sharing the gospel every day. And we are, but we need you in there as well. Second of all, at some point, if we grow, we'll run out of the seats we have in between you. We'll put some seats out there by the TVs. We'll run out of children's space. And then what we're going to do is we're going to add some gatherings on a Sunday. Sunday afternoons, we'll add some gatherings so that we can create some new space for those of you that can transition into a Sunday afternoon gathering and enjoy a great Sabbath morning and afternoon on the lake and then come to church. Then we're going to be able to do that. We'll do that when we need to. And we will engage in that when we need to. And then what will we need when we do that? A brand new set of people to engage in children's ministry and donuts and tech and everything else. So we'll need you to be buckling up and gearing up to jump in and serve in this place. When we add those gatherings, you're already going, okay, what time are they? I want to start planning. Can you tell me? Is it going to work? Just relax. Take a deep breath. It's okay. We'll let you know all of that once we get to that place. And then after that, we know at some point we can only do so many gatherings before it just becomes unrealistic. And so we're going to need to expand space. So come the fall of 2019, we will begin the discussion together of what it looks like to take that 28,000 square foot sitting empty behind those walls that we own as a church and be able to move into that space to provide the space for people that need to be discipled and know Jesus and become missional to be here and hear the gospel week after week and be reminded of the gospel week after week. And we're going to talk about that in the fall so that in 2020 and 21, we are moving toward making sure that we have the space we need. And then we're going to begin to campus out and church plant like mad people so that we have little gospel outposts all over our city that is unchurched and dechurched and all over our state so that we can become a part of the catalyst of not just affecting things right here, but affecting things in our city and around the world. And it's going to start with us buckling up and getting on board with being trained up to pray, to evangelize, to trust God with growth, and to facilitate the growth when it comes. So, welcome to the vision of 2019. Let's go have some fun. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your incredible love for us, for your grace and mercy in our lives, as you have, with such clarity through the awesome space of Outreach Magazine and their ministry and all those other awesome churches that I had a poor view of, and now you have set me straight. Through them, you have created such an incredible vision for us. What an unlikely place I would have ever imagined, and yet it's exactly the place you had ready to teach me and teach us about what it means to demonstrate our passion for you well, to demonstrate your passion for people well. Make us a church, God, that takes this stuff seriously, that digs in hard this year, that prepares ourselves well, and that starts today in engaging in our community, in sharing with the people in our circles of influence, not only our faith, but this community, so that they can come and experience what it's like to be around a bunch of people that actually believe you and actually live that way. God, may we become a church where people come here and are invited here, that the plausibility of the gospel would be felt here, seen here, experienced here. And that then we would become a people also that in sharing the good news of the gospel would be clear and competent in that, so that people can come to understand it well, follow you, be set free by you, live for your kingdom and in your kingdom even while on this planet. We can't wait for you to show us the things you are going to through 1 Peter. Thank you for him and using him to write that book. And we can't wait to see what you're going to do in our midst, in us and through us, as you grow us this year deeply in our hearts and souls to become a people that best represent you as ambassadors of Christ and ministers of reconciliation. People to you. In Jesus' name, amen.